Welcome to the Student Loan Planner Podcast, where we share information to help borrowers ditch their student loan anxiety by becoming more educated and therefore more empowered. I'm joined today by Dan Rooker, a certified financial planner and fellow consultant on the Student Loan Planner team. Oh, I can't be a very good podcast host because I didn't even introduce myself. I'm Lauren Williams. And I've been helping borrowers with their student loans as a part of the Student Loan Planner team since 2018. For many, graduation is approaching, so Dan and I thought it would be a great idea to walk you through all things graduation, exit counseling, and planning ahead so that you're ready to start adulting with your loans. Dan, how is it going?
That is a complicated question, Lauren. It's going great. It's going really well. I am loving life, doing lots of consults right now. A lot of people just want answers, but it's going really well. Thank you.
You are right. We are slammed. We actually added two members to the team recently. So we are now a party of eight at Student Loan Planner, and we're still booked out quite a bit. It's good, though, that people are adulting and being really serious about figuring out what is the right plan for their loan specifically and not trying to do a one-size-fits-all sort of scenario, because it's a lot to sort through. So How's life for you in general?
On the personal side, my wife and I, we bought a place, a duplex in Chicago. So we're doing the house hacking thing and going through renovations. That's fun.
Oh, I bet it is so much fun.
Yeah. But we're working through it. And just like everyone else going through a renovation, it's a different hurdle, a new thing to experience. We're sometimes enjoying the moments, sometimes not.
Are you living in the house while the renovations are happening?
Not quite yet, but soon. Soon we won't have a choice. We're still in our apartment that we've been in for a few years, and there will be a time period where we move in and there is no kitchen, and hopefully there's a bathroom.
Oh my goodness. My heart goes out to everyone who's doing renovations and has bought a home during this pandemic time, because delays and changes and pricing and all of that, like, yes, you're going to make it through, Dan. You're going to make it through.
Thank you.
All right, so let's jump in. I think maybe we should start with just kind of the mechanics of a student loan repayment, since those who are graduating have yet to make a payment in many cases. You know, unless they're graduating from graduate school and they, you know, maybe jumped in the repayment a little bit for undergrad, it's kind of all, you know, a blur though. So let's start with just some basics. The grace period is one of the things that happens initially when you get out of school. So can you just talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. If you graduate from undergrad, you have Stafford loans, probably Stafford subsidized and Stafford unsubsidized loans. And when you graduate from graduate school, you probably also have Stafford loans, because usually when you take out loans, the first bucket you fill between Stafford loans and PLUS loans are the Stafford loans. So with Stafford loans, a borrower gets 6 months of what's called a grace period, where they don't have to make payments. When they enter their grace period, it's automatic. It's as soon as you graduate. And so you have your graduation date. Maybe it's May 15th. And 6 months from May 15th would make it 11/15, November 15th. And if you do nothing, then you won't be required to make a payment. And that seems like a good thing, right, Lauren? It seems like a good thing.
It can be a good thing. I mean, not having to pay your loans, you're fresh out of school. You maybe don't have your whole money situation figured out yet. You might not have a job yet. You have credit card debt and you're trying to figure that out, or you're trying to build an emergency fund. I think I could go 6 months without having to worry about my loans and then maybe start paying later.
Right. That seems like a good thing. When we do consults, a lot of times we look at a borrower's loan file. We see that they use their grace period, and that's pretty normal. But if you think about it, when your two options are to follow out an income-driven plan to the end, and that income-driven plan is maybe 120 payments on public service loan forgiveness, or 240 payments on the pay-as-you-earn plan, or 300 payments on a different income-driven plan, every month counts, and the count doesn't start until you're on the plan. So from that perspective, using your grace period, and I say this in a lot of presentations, I say, if every borrower knew what to do with their grace period, no one would take it, or almost no one would take it. I guess there is one situation which you might take it.
Ooh, do tell. One reason that you might take your grace period.
So I think the one potential reason which you don't take your grace period is if you're going to grad school, and you're going to grad school within the 6 months after you graduate. In that situation, I think it would make sense to have your loans just hang out and wait until you start school and the loans go back into their in-school deferment.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's one reason you should take your grace period. So in general, what you're saying is probably doesn't make a lot of sense, assuming that you're going to be on an income-driven repayment plan or you're going for public service loan forgiveness. Like, you don't want to wait 6 months if you can start paying and get those that clock counting for you. And, you know, likely you'll have a lower payment in general if you're on an income-driven plan because you're fresh out of school. So you don't want those months to pass. But if you are, like, getting out of school and then just trying to, like, apply or get everything situated so that you can go right back to school in the fall, doesn't make sense to kind of come out of the grace period, because you go from grace period basically right back into deferment and life is lovely and you can just kind of move on, keep things simple. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, that's what I'm saying, Lauren. You know, there is an argument to say, you know, we're not here to say you have to start making payments. If you are thinking, Dan, Lauren, I don't have a job yet, or I need to pass my licensing and that's going to take this summer and I need to take exams after grad school in order to start working. That's life. That's what happens. But there are still steps you can take to do it a little better. If you're thinking, I can't afford a payment because I don't have work, maybe an income-driven plan still works, because a $0 payment could count. I'll just pick one out of the hat that's easy. On the revised pay-as-you-earn plan, you get on the plan after you graduate, you get an interest subsidy, and now your balance grows half as fast as it did during grace period. That's one potential outcome.
Ooh, this is a hack. Okay, but I think we need to like slow down a second, because these are people who are new grads and they're just like, what are they talking about income driven? Maybe they haven't been binging the podcast. Someone sent this to them. So let's just back up for a second and talk about what the payment options can be. So we've mentioned income driven, but there's a bunch of different income driven plans. The other thing is that there's kind of a default. So the big scary thing that I see all the time is people are reaching out to us because they're like, my student loan payment is going to be $4,000 and I don't even make that much a month. Like, this is terrible. So, you know, figuring out what your payment is thing number one, you know, and what happens is generally after that grace period, you kick to what they call the standard repayment. And it's this big, scary number that is based on you paying the loans off in 10 years. And if it's not a big, scary number, because your income looks pretty good, you know, you're making $20,000 a month and it says that your payment's going to be $3,000. Like, it's like, okay, this is not so bad. I can afford this. Then that's a whole nother conversation about maybe possibly refinancing. But let's just like slow down and talk about like what your payment may be. How do you figure it out? What are the payment plans? Break it down for us, Dan.
Sure. If you are just finished or you're coming up here in a couple months, mechanically what happens is you graduate, financial aid office reaches out to National Student Loan Clearinghouse to say you've graduated. They reach out to your loan servicer to change your loan status from in-school deferment to grace period likely, or just some standard deferment that follows grace period for your Grad Plus loans. When that period is up, if you wait all the way till the end, you get placed on that 10-year standard default. If you want to choose a different plan prior to your grace period ending, the only way to get out of grace period is to consolidate your loans. So if you consolidate, that means combine, not leave the federal system, but combine your loans in the federal system. You can choose through the consolidation application to be on an income-driven plan, and there's five of those plans, or you could choose to be on a fixed or graduated type of payment plan. There's four of those in the federal system. So on the income-driven side, we've got the income contingent repayment plan. That's a really, really old plan from the early 90s. We have the old income-based repayment plan. After that came the pay-as-you-earn plan, December of 2012, the revised pay-as-you-earn plan, and the new income-based repayment plan. And those are the five plans. They all have different rules. Maybe, I don't know, Lauren, should we step through the rules or would that be a little too far in the weeds?
I think that's getting a little bit in the weeds, but I think the main point we need to drive home is this idea that they're like you said, they're not all the same. So there's income-driven repayment, which is the name of a program. And then underneath that umbrella, you have five different options. And so the biggest thing that I see with borrowers is that they all go get on income-based repayment because it sounds like income-driven repayment, when in fact, mm-hmm. income-based repayment is one of the types of income-driven plans. And so income-based may not be the right thing for you, because one of the other income-driven options is appropriate. So just know that they all have their own nuances and that you want to find the one that's going to be the most appropriate for you. I think, Dan, it might be good, though, to go over maybe pay-as-you-earn and repay briefly, since those are the two more likely ones that borrowers that are just finishing school will be using.
Absolutely, can do. And if you're listening to this and you're really interested in finding out what your payment is, a good place to start would go to our website, studentloanplanner.com, calculators at the top. We have an income-driven repayment plan calculator, and you can check to see, enter your loan balance, enter your income, see what your payment's going to be. Pay-as-you-earn and revised pay-as-you-earn are probably, I would say, the two most popular income-driven plans out there by volume, by the number of people on them. And pay-as-you-earn, specifically, you're allowed into that plan, you're eligible for that plan if you first became a borrower after October 1st, 2007, and you have at least one loan after July 1st, 2011. And pay-as-you-earn takes, just like revised pay-as-you-earn, it takes 10% of your discretionary income every year. And revised pay-as-you-earn does something similar. The main difference between the two, mainly that we point out in consults, on the podcast, in articles, is that pay-as-you-earn allows a married couple to exclude the other's income, so the non-borrower's income, if they file their tax return married filing separate. Well, revised pay-as-you-earn is going to include spouse's income no matter how you file. And these two plans are, you can choose between them likely if you have direct loans. These plans don't take FFEL or FFELP, as sometimes people see them, loans. They don't take Perkins loans. They don't take health professional loans. They take direct Stafford loans, direct plus loans.
I think that's a really good rundown of how these plans work. And I think it's important for borrowers to know that revised pay-as-you-earn and pay-as-you-earn are the most likely. And so that's something you should be looking into. You know, we don't know your particular student loan situation just yet. But I think the other thing is, you know, the idea that once you're on one of these income-driven plans, you are going to provide your income, and then every 12 months, you're going to provide your income again, and they're going to recalculate your payment based on your income. So when we talk about income-driven, it's the idea that it is tied to your income, but people are always a little bit confused about, well, do I, you know, every month, if my income changes, if I get a bonus in my paycheck, do I have to update it? What happens? Mm-hmm. And the answer is every 12 months is what happens. They're going to reach out to you usually about 9 months down the road and say like, hey, it's time for you to provide your new income. And you have like a 3 month window to actually get it done. One thing you absolutely don't want to do is be late certifying your income, because what happens there is that they capitalize all your interest. So interest might be piling up in a separate bucket. And they're also going to kick you back over to that big, scary standard repayment number, which is not going to be a fun thing. So then you got to call and you got to get back on the plan. They put you in a forbearance. It gets a little bit hairy. So if you choose an income driven plan, you want to respect the 12 month cycle and have your payment. You recertify your income every 12 months. And so there's the term recertification, but there's also recalculation. So, Dan, can you kind of break that down for us? Because some people have been on these income-driven plans and they get a little bit confused about when it might be a good time to recalculate versus recertify. And what's the difference?
Sure. So let's be really clear on one thing about recertification. StudentAid.gov has, on their website, through their COVID relief page, stated that the earliest a borrower can be required to recertify for their income-driven plan, that is, renew participation in the plan, provide documentations to studentaid.gov so that they can pass that on through to your loan servicer and your loan servicer can calculate your payment. Recertification does not have to be done until earliest November of 2022. And if your loan file says some date between today and November of 2022, it will actually be pushed out by one full year. So if you're logging into studentaid.gov and your loan file says that your recertification date is May 1st of 2022, maybe that's a bad date to pick. Let's say July 1st of 2022, then your recertification date will be July 1st of 2023. Recalculation is different. Recalculation has a place. I think the place that it makes the most sense for a borrower is when a life event has occurred that causes your income to drop and is an opportunity, in a sense, between 12-month cycles for that recertification period, for you to come in and say, this is how much I make now. So what it's designed for, the spirit of recalculation, is if a life event occurs and you don't have the income to make your payment, you can go to studentaid.gov. You can go to manage your loans or manage my loans. You can click on the income-driven repayment plan page to then recalculate your payment. And if you're, you know, maybe you're on maternity leave and you decided to go on an extended leave, and so you're going unpaid, in that case, it would make sense to go in, have your payment recalculated based off of your then current income, and it would drop. I think, Lauren, the key is if it would drop your payment, that's a good opportunity to go in, right?
Exactly. So just to be mindful of the idea that you don't need to recertify for up to 12 months. However, if something happens and your income goes down, you can ask them to recalculate your payment. And you absolutely should do that in a time where you would, like I said, have a need. Because what the default is for a lot of people is like, oh my goodness, I lost my job. I need to go into forbearance. You know, I can't think about these loans right now. Instead, it would make sense for them to recalculate your payment. And that's what so many people were doing at the beginning of the pandemic, which is kind of, I think, how we ended up in the COVID forbearances. They realized that we were having mass effects on our economy and that a lot of people were either going to end up going into forbearance personally or stop paying their loans altogether. And they just said, hey, let's just put a blanket stop on this until we can figure things out. So definitely recalculate if your income goes down.
I would add one more thing. I think that on the side of recalculation and how that's very different from calling in and saying, putting my loans in forbearance, if you recalculate, if you take 30 minutes to go through the application to have your payment recalculated, those $0 payments or lower than what you used to make payments will continue to count towards your income-driven plan, will continue to count towards one of these forgiveness plans. Whereas if you call and say, put my loans in forbearance, that might not take as long, but the result is you're stopping your progress towards some future end date of forgiveness through public service loan forgiveness or forgiveness through the long term.
Perfect points. And as we think about, you know, we're talking a lot about recertification dates. What is the repayment and what things could look like if you're trying to pay your loans over the long term? But let's talk a little bit about like what it looks like in the short term. Like, how do you actually make a payment? What does that look like from a, you know, month to month basis? Like due date as an example, let's talk about like when actual student loan payments are due, because I know that is something that is kind of become a point of contention for some borrowers. They're just like, well, if I pay late, does this still count? Can I make 5 payments at one time? And does that count for, you know, my income driven or my public service loan forgiveness? So let's just start by talking like due date of loans.
Yeah. So I think the best thing that a borrower can do is you could start by logging into studentaid.gov, look at your loans to see the date. Like what you'll end up seeing is maybe studentaid.gov is going to have an old date for starting payments again. For everybody listening, as we're recording this, the current resuming of payments is going to be after August 31st of this year. When it comes up to that point, so you won't have to make a payment between now and then, log into studentaid.gov to figure out who your loan servicer is if you don't know who it is. You can call your loan servicer. You can log into your loan servicer's website. And just to kind of as a catch-all, your loan servicer might be Great Lakes. It might be Fed Loan Servicing. Might be Ed Financial, Nelnet, Navient, AidVantage. Whoever it is, log in and maybe start a chat on the contact us page just to make sure that you've got the date right for when your payment is due. And the due date is unique to you. So a loan servicer could choose to make the due date the same for all loans if they want to. But from what we've seen, it's just a due date that is a certain day in the month. And you want to make sure that your payment is made on or by that due date for that month.
Nice, simple, and straight to the point. What about the idea of like auto pay and, you know, setting up your bank? Some people like to just set their bills up and say like, set it and forget it. Is that a viable option? Does it work? Do you set your auto pay up to go on your payment due date or a couple of days later? What other things should we be thinking about as it pertains to like how, you know, the outside world works with your student loans?
So loan servicers, if we think about what their role is not to give advice. They're not loan advisors. They're loan servicers. So their role is to make sure that your payment comes from your bank account and is applied appropriately to your loans. And for a lot of borrowers, you have more than one loan. Most borrowers have more than one loan. If you went to 4 years of dental school, you've got at least 8 loans. So they take your payment, it's one payment, and then they spread it across your loans appropriately. Now, a lot of loan servicers are preparing for that. And so you may have received correspondence from your loan servicer saying, it's time to enroll in auto pay. Do you want to do this? This is something that we recommend. And that's their way of saying, we want to make it easy for you. If you enroll in auto pay, if you hook up your bank account so that when it does come time to make payment, we'll make sure it gets taken at the right time. You know, you can do right by yourself by doing that. And then what I think would be a good practice is just as we're leading up to the end of this payment freeze, check in with your loan servicer to make sure that it's set up that way. And also check in with your loan servicer to see when they're going to take the payment so that you can work it into your budget on a go-forward basis.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point, because the budget, the big bad B word, is an important part of this process as well, is, you know, understanding what your monthly expenses will look like and, you know, when this is going to be taking place and that everything is okay. What about prepayments? So, you know, I mentioned earlier about the idea that some people are like, can I just pay 5 times at once and, you know, get my loans, or make 120 payments all at one time while my payment is $3 and just get my loans forgiven? Like, does it work like that? What is a prepayment and when does it make sense to possibly make a prepayment?
Yeah, so let's see. So prepayments, the way that we talk about them in consults, all of us consultants, is, and I'm just relaying this in my own words. I'm sure we say it maybe a little differently, but I would put them into 2 categories. There are prepayments for income-driven plans, whether you're pursuing long-term forgiveness or public service loan forgiveness. And then there are prepayments for paying it down to zero plans, we'll call them. With an income-driven plan, you can make a prepayment that is paying your required payment in advance for the length of your loan up to the next recertification date. So if your recertification date is, and you can do it up to 12 months in advance, that's as far out as you could probably go. But if your recertification date, say you start payments in September and your recertification date is March of 2023, well, you could make prepayments from September until March, and that's as far as you can go. Otherwise, if you go past that, your loan servicer will just put you into paid ahead status. And from the standpoint of getting qualifying payments towards loan forgiveness, where you make the minimum required payment and the name of the game is paying the minimum required payment, not more, getting in paid ahead status doesn't really help us. Now, on the side of paying it down to zero, whether you're in the federal system on a fixed or graduated type of plan, or you're outside of the federal system in a private loan, when you make a prepayment, you're moving your end date that's out in the future of finishing the loan closer to you, and you're reducing the amount of total paid in, that is what you owe plus interest. So on the side of paying it down to zero, prepayments are the best type of payments to do. And I would do as many prepayments as you can and pay as far ahead as you can. But on the side of forgiveness, right, Lauren, like I would say, we don't really want to make prepayments. Maybe it just complicates things a little bit more than necessary.
I would definitely say that it makes things a little bit more complicated. And also, you know, as we think about this, so at Student Loan Planner, we're pretty much, you know, there's 2 sides of the fence. One is you are going for forgiveness. You're paying as little as humanly possible toward your loans. And at the 20 or 25 year mark, you're going to have a tax liability. And, you know, overall, that's going to be the most cost efficient way for you to pay the loans. On the other side of that is refinancing your loans, paying your loans in full because you know that you can afford to do so. It's going to be the most cost effective thing. And you're trying to save as much money as possible on interest. So you either want to get on one side of the fence or the other. You don't want to split the difference. So if you're on an income-driven plan, you don't want to start paying extra towards your loans. And this is where, you know, prepayments are not necessarily paying extra towards your loans, but it also can, like you said, convolute things quite a bit, Dan, to where, like you said, you got a bonus check and your payment is $50 a month, but you only have 6 months until your next recertification date. Well, 60 and the 50, that's what, $300. You don't want to put more than $300 towards your loans. Otherwise, you go to this pay to head status. And just to even like remember that, figure it out, how many payments do I have left? It makes a lot more sense to just pay the $50 a month, keep your income on a monthly basis stable from a budgetary standpoint, instead of risking getting in pay at a head status or, you know, messing things up as it pertains, or even putting your whole bonus toward, you know, in my example, your whole bonus toward your loans when you kind of needed to do your emergency fund or pay off credit card debt, or you're saving for a home down payment. So now it's not being applied appropriately and you didn't get to use it for something that was better. So either do the prepayments, pay aggressively, or get in the bucket of pay slowly, or get on the train of pay slowly and go for forgiveness. So as we start to wrap things up, let's talk about what we learned today. Thing number one, don't use your grace period unless it absolutely makes sense for you, which there's very few reasons where the grace period is going to be absolutely necessary. Then to make sure that you have your bank account, your contact information, your auto pay all set up and ready to rock and roll with your loan servicer. A lot of times people get a little bit confused. So studentaid.gov is like the official federal student loan site, and you do have to interact with them, but you actually have a company that is designated to your loans. So that could be Great Lake, Nelnet, Navient, Fed Loans, Mohila. We now have Aid Advantage. Those are your loan servicers, and those are the people you need to contact if, you know, you have like kind of nuts and bolts things that you're trying to figure out related to your loans. The other thing is make sure to set a payment due date. And if you're making prepayments, it should only be if you're trying to pay your loans off in their entirety. So if you're trying to get these loans off your plate, save as much money on interest as possible, then it makes sense to do so. Dan, do you have anything you want to say as we wrap it up today?
We didn't touch on it earlier, and this is something that is just a maybe jargon or this nebulous term, but loan exit counseling is something that everybody goes through when graduating with student loans. It's something that your financial aid office or your financial wellness program at school is going to walk you through in the last couple months of school. So we had pre-decided to throw this into the console notes, but just for the pod, you've got loan exit counseling coming up in the next month or two, and you will have to go to studentaid.gov one way or another, the same place that you went to fill out your FAFSA every year. If you haven't logged in before, go to studentaid.gov, punch in your FSA ID, click forgot password, get yourself set up, because when you go to loan exit counseling through your school, they're going to point you back to studentaid.gov and say, you have to fill out exit counseling. It's going to take you half an hour. Go through this process, and studentaid.gov is where you do it. So if you want to get a head start on that, it'll take you maybe 5 minutes to reset your password to get logged in. Go to studentaid.gov/exit counseling.
This has been another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I hope you all enjoyed hanging out with Dan and myself today. If you're looking to get your student loan plan in place, specifically customized to you, you know where to find us. It's at studentloanplanner.com. We do 1 hour consultations to help you figure out a student loan strategy and get on the right track so that these student loans are not hanging over your head, giving you anxiety. You feel really clear about what your path is going forward and what to do if you need to pivot. That's all I got for you all today. Until next time.